Chapter 7. Voke and Speculations. Esaradon. Through the Void. But I did not die. The bolt gun, that gift from Librarian Britnoth, which had never failed me in 10 decades of use, failed to fire. The child thing shrieked and leapt away into the smoke and flames and struggling shapes around me. The dead space marine toppled over. The air frothed with psychic discharge, and 3 figures ran past me in pursuit of the tiny abomination. Inquisitors. All 3 were Inquisitors, or interrogators at least. 1, I was sure, was Inquisitor Lyko. I lowered my shaking hand. Both it and the bolt gun it clutched were cased in psionic ice. The mechanism jammed and locked out. I turned and found Commodus Voke standing a few paces behind me. His ancient face was contorted with internal pressure. Crusts of sympathetic frost glittered on his long black gown.
"Point it aside,"
his words came out as halting gasps.
"I cannot hold it much longer."
Swiftly, I turned the bolt gun aside and up into the air. With a barking gasp, he convulsively relaxed, and the weapon bucked and fired. The deadly round whined away harmlessly into the sky. Voke was sagging, the gyros in the augmetic exoskeleton that cradled his frail body straining to manage his balance. I gave him my hand in support. "Thank you, Commodus."
"No matter," he said,
his voice a whisper. His strength began to return, and he peered up at me with his bird-bright eyes.
"Only a brave man or a fool tangles with a plus alpha psyker."
"Then I'm both or neither. I was closest to the emergency. I could not just stand by." We were assailed by extraordinary noises from the charnel ground behind us. Gunfire, grenades, screams, and the popping, surging sounds of mines fracturing reality, compressing matter, boiling atmosphere. I saw a robed man, an inquisitor or an astropath, rising slowly into the sky in a pillar of green fire, burning, shredding inside out. I saw geysers of blood like waterspouts, squalls of hail and acid rain, localized to this small stretch of the avenue, blustered across us, triggered by the ferocity of the psychic war. Figures were rushing in to join that battle, many from the Ordos with their expert bodyguards and dozens of the Adeptus Astartes. There was a vibration underfoot, and I saw that one of the towering warhound titans was stalking past the Spatian gate, spitting its turbo-lasers at ground targets. A series of withering explosions, mainly psychoblasts, tore through the habitats and hive structures on the eastern side of the wide and now infamous avenue. Imperial marauders flashed low overhead. The sky was black with smoke, all sunlight blotted out. Wisps of ash fell on us like grey snow.
"This is a great crime," Voke said to me. "A black day in the Imperial annals."
I had forgotten how much Commodus Voke loved understatement. The greater part of Hive Primaris remained lawless and out of control for 5 days. Panic, rioting, looting, and civil unrest boiled through the streets and hab levels of the wounded megapolis as the Arbites and the other organs of the Imperium struggled to impose martial law and restore order. It was a desperate task. The indigenous population alone was vast, but it had been swelled to an unimaginable extent by pilgrims and tourists for the Novena. Sympathetic panic riots broke out in other hives, too. For a day or two, it seemed like the entire planet was going to collapse in blood and fire. Small sections of Hive Primaris had managed to insulate themselves. The elite spire levels, the noble houses, built like fortresses, the impregnable precincts of the Inquisition, the Imperial Guard, the Astropathicus, the various bastions of the Munitorum, and the royal palace of the Lord Commander. Elsewhere, especially in the common and general hab levels, it was like a war zone. The Ecclesiarchy suffered particularly gravely. With the monument of the Ecclesiarch in flames, the common masses regarded the nightmare as some holy curse, and turned in their frenzy on all the churches, temples, and sacerdotal orders they could find. We learned within the first few hours that Cardinal Palatine Anderusius had been killed in the destruction of the monument. He was far from the only great hierarch to perish in the orgy of carnage that followed. The recapture or extermination of the remaining rogue psykers was the first and most fundamental task facing the authorities. 10 were known to have escaped the initial battle on the avenue of the Victor Bellum, and these had fled into the hive, sowing carnage as they went, hunted by the forces of the Inquisition and all the imperial might that could be brought to bear in support. 2 of them made it only a kilometre or 2 from the route of the procession, hounded every step by imperial forces from the avenue battle, and were neutralised by nightfall on that terrible first day. Another went to ground in a vegetable cannery in an eastern sector outhab, and was laid to siege. It cost 3 days and the lives of 800 imperial guardsmen, 62 astropaths, 2 space marines, and 6 inquisitors to blast it out and burn it. The cannery and the outhab for 3 square kilometres around it was flattened. There was little or no central control for our forces. Admiral Otron, who had remained with the orbiting battle fleet as watch commander, managed to move 4 picket ships into geosynchronous orbit above Hive Primaris, and for a while succeeded in providing comprehensive vox and astropathic communications for the ground forces. But by nightfall on the first day, psychic storms had blown up across the hive, and all relayed reception was lost. It was a dark and frightening period. Down in the burning streets, we subdivided as best we could into small units, functioning autonomously. Simply by dint of being with Voke, I became part of a group that made its headquarters in an RBT section house on Blammerside Street in the Mercantile District. Desperate groups of citizens flocked to us, craving aid and mercy and sanctuary, and much larger gangs attacked the section house time and again, driven by fear, by rage against the imperial machine, or simply because we wouldn't let them in. We couldn't. We were overflowing with injured and dead, far too many for the RBT's surgeons and morgue attendants to manage. There was very little food, medical supplies, or ammunition left, and we were also rationing water, as the main supply had been cut. The power was down too, but the section house had its own generator. All through the night, bottles and missiles and promethium bombs splintered off the shielded windows, and fists pounded on the doors. By merit of his seniority, Voke was in command. Aside from myself, there was Inquisitor Roban, Inquisitor Yelena, Inquisitor Esadari, 20 interrogators and junior servants of the Inquisition, 60 troopers from the Interior Guard, several dozen astropaths and 4 White Consul Space Marines. The Arbites themselves numbered around 150, and the section house was also sheltering about 300 nobles, ecclesiarchs, and dignitaries from the Great Triumph, as well as a few hundred common citizens. I remember standing alone in a ransacked office of the Arbites commander just after midnight, looking out through shielded windows at the burning streets and the blossoms of psycho storms that were wrenching the sky apart. I had received no word or sign of Ravenna since the catastrophe had begun. I remember my hands were shaking even then. In truth, I believe I was in shock. From the event itself, naturally, and also from the psychic assaults I had suffered in the course of it. I pride myself on a sharp mind, but there was no sharpness to me then. Numb, my brain kept returning to the idea that this outrage had been deliberate.
"There is no question," Voke said from behind me, clearly reading my surface thoughts without my permission.
He lifted and straightened a steel chair and sat down on it.
"Accidents happen. Warplanes crash," he cried. "But these turned and attacked. Their assaults were deliberate."
I nodded. At least one of the lightnings had crashed into the War Master's entourage, and another had come down amongst the files of the Inquisition. No one yet knew how many of my institution had been slain, but Voke had seen enough of it to know that as many as 200 of our fellow Inquisitors had been obliterated. I remembered the conversation that had turned around my dining table, the speculations about those powerful forces who would oppose Honorius's bestowment. "Is this the first act in a house war?" I said. "The ecclesiarchy, or perhaps great dynasties, trying to thwart Lord Commander Helicon's advancement of the War Master. His elevation to feudal protector would not have been popular with many powerful factions."
"No," he said, "though I'm sure that's what many will think. What many will be supposed to think."
Voke looked at me intently.
"Freeing the psychers was the point," he said. "There is no other explanation. The arch-enemy struck to cause mayhem and allow the prisoners to escape, and to wound the section of the parade that was most able to contain their escape."
I won't argue with that in principle. But was freeing the psychers the point itself, or simply a means to an end?
How so?
Was it an attempt to liberate the psychers, or was this just an act of extreme violence against the Imperium that the release of dangerous psychers was meant to exacerbate?
Until we know what was behind it, we can't answer that.
Could the psychers themselves have done it? Manipulated the minds of the pilots? He shrugged.
We can't know that either. Not yet. The War Master might have been guilty of bravado in displaying his prisoners, but he would have made certain security around them was seamless. I must suspect an outside hand.
We said nothing for a moment. Honorius Magnus himself had barely survived the crash blast and was undergoing emergency surgery aboard a medical frigate at the Navy Yard. No one yet knew if Lord Commander Helicon was alive. If he was dead, or if the War Master died of his injuries, then Chaos would have won a historic victory. I suspect an outside hand, too, I told Voke. Perhaps another psyker or psykers trailing their colleagues here to stage an escape. He pursed his lipless mouth.
The greatest triumph of my life, Gregor, capturing those monsters in the name of the Emperor. And look what it becomes.
You can't blame yourself for this, Commodus.
Can I not?
He squinted at me.
In my place, how would you feel?
I shrugged.
I will make amends. I will not rest until every one of these wretches is destroyed and order restored. And then I will not rest until I find who and what was behind it.
He stared at me for a long time. What? I asked, though I had a feeling I knew what was coming.
You. You were close to the scene, as you said to me. Closer than many, and shielded from the worst of the destruction by the bulk of the Spacian Gate.
And?
You know what I want to ask you.
You thought you'd start with me. I'm too tired, Voke. I stopped to honour the Admiral's tomb. He raised one eyebrow, as if he sensed I didn't really believe it myself. But at least he did me the courtesy of not ripping into my mind with his much more powerful psychic abilities to scour out what truth might be there. We had reached an understanding through our encounters over the years, and were now even when it came to owing each other our lives. He knew me well enough not to press this. Not now, at least. An interrogator hurried into the room.
Sirs, she said, Inquisitor Roban wishes you to know that we have made contact with one of the heretics.
As far as could be learned, the rogue was an Alpha Plus psyker called a Saradon, one of the leaders of the Coven. Sowing tumult and woe in his wake, he had fled into the Hive with a group led by Lyco and Haldane in pursuit. Haldane had managed to contact one of Voke's astropaths with a scrambled summons for help. Voke, Roban, and I headed out into the Hive streets with a kill team of 60 that included the 4 white consoles. Their squad leader was a particularly large sergeant called Curvel. We travelled on foot through the debris and smoke. Gangs of citizens jeered and pelted missiles at us, but the sight of 4 terrible space marines kept them at bay. As Saradon, Voke warned me, was a being of dreadful intellect and not to be underestimated. When we saw the monster's choice of bolt hole, I understood what Voke meant. The noble family of Lang was prominent in the aristocracy of Thracian Primaris, and kept an ample summer palace in the east sector of Hive Primaris, near to the mercantile quarter where they had made their fortunes. The palace rose proud of the low Hab streets around it, swathed in its own force bubble. This had been one of the city areas we had supposed to be secure. With their power and resources, noble houses should have been able to protect themselves for the duration of the unrest. But not against a Saradon. He was inside, with all the resources of the palace to protect him. We met Haldane on the western approach road to the palace. He had a team of about 20 with him. The street itself was littered with bodies, most of them citizens.
"He's controlling the crowds as if they were puppets," Haldane said curtly, with no word of greeting. "Waves of them keep coming at us, preventing us getting to the garden walls and the servants' annex along there."
As I may have said, I had little time for Inquisitor Haldane. A very tall, grim man, his face an unsightly mass of scar tissue since an encounter with a hungry Carnadon back on Gudrun. He'd been Voke's pupil when I had first met him, Now he was a full inquisitor, with mental powers, it was said, that exceeded even his old master's. As I saw him there, I shuddered. He had undergone extensive surgery, not to disguise the damage to his face, but to exaggerate it. His skull seemed to have been extended into an almost equine shape, with a snout-like mouth full of blunt teeth and dark, murky eyes. Fibre wires and fluid tubes braided his cranium in place of hair. He wore plasteel body armour, the colour of blood, and carried a segmented power glaive.
"Eisenhorn,"
he nodded, noticing me. It was like having a warhorse shake its head in my direction.
"They're coming again,"
the cry went up from Haldane's men. Down the street, moving through the fire spills, figures were lurching towards us.
"Weapons, stand ready,"
Haldane had spoken, but not with his voice. His psychic command shook through our skulls, and some of our own troopers looked dismayed. Missiles rained down on us, and the interior guardsmen raised an umbrella of riot shields. Small arms fired at us, too, and an Arbetes near me fell with his knee buckled the wrong way. Our attackers, some 100 or more, were Hive citizens, blank-faced and moving like marionettes. As Haldane had reported, some monumental psychic force was making puppets out of them, the smoky night air ionized with the psionic backwash. I take no pleasure in actions like the one that followed. The beast Asaradon was forcing us to fight innocent civilians just to protect ourselves. Maybe he thought we'd shrink from the task and leave him alone. We, however, were the Inquisition. Curvel led his white consuls at the front, banging their weapons against their chest plates and howling defiance through their helmet speakers. I saw a Promethean bomb strike one and shatter, swathing him in liquid flame. He simply strode on. We fired over the mob's heads, trying to break them, but they had no will of their own. Our firing became kill shots. In 10 minutes, we had reluctantly added a fair number to the planet's rising death toll. That brought us to the corner of the street, facing the high walls of the garden and the edge of the palace's iridescent force shield itself. I could hear a low chuckling in my head. Asaradon.
"Where's Lyco?"
I heard Voke ask Haldane psychically.
"He took a team around the front to try and disable the force wall."
"You idiot," I said out loud, looking over at Haldane. "This monster can control a crowd that big, and you mind speak this close to him?"
"This monster," Haldane replied, "can read every mind in the city and beyond. He knows what we're all doing. There is no point in secrecy, just effort. Is that beyond you?"
"How long until the next attack?"
Curvel asked, reloading his weapon.
"They've become less frequent since we first arrived," replied Haldane. "However long it takes Asaradon to mind-search the surrounding habs and recruit another puppet force, he's having to cast his net wider each time."
"How did he get in there?" Roban asked.
Haldane simply shook his head and shrugged. Roban, a robust inquisitor of middle years, dressed in brown and yellow layered robes, was a good man, though I didn't know him well. But he was an outspoken Xanthanite, and the ultra-Puritan Haldane had little time for him. Voke and Haldane fell to discussing possible assault plans with Curvel, as the soldiers around us formed a defensive position.
"This is a damn thankless task," Roban said to me. "I don't even know why we're here."
"Cannon fodder,"
said his youthful interrogator, Inchebel, bluntly, and it made us both laugh. "There has to be something," I said. I took out my pocket scope and tried to read the energy patterns and spectrums. "You," I called to one of the Arbetes in our party, a grizzled precinct commander in full riot gear.
"Inquisitor?"
"What's your name?"
"Lucullus, sir."
"Dear God, Emperor." I sighed again, and Roban laughed once more. "Okay, Luckless. This palace must come into your precinct's patrol area."
"Yes, sir."
"So street security around it is your responsibility."
"Again? Yes, sir."
"So, just as a matter of procedure, your section house will have on file the shield type and harmonics for the palace, in case of emergencies." In my experience, it was standard protocol for any Arbetes precinct to know such things about key structures within their purview.
"It's classified, sir."
"Of course it is," I sighed again. "But now would be a good time." He got on his Voxlink, and after a lot of effort, managed to get a channel open to the section house.
"You're onto something, aren't you?"
Roban asked me.
"Maybe. The wily Inquisitor Eisenhorn."
"The what?"
"No offense. Your reputation precedes you."
does it now? In a good way? Roban grinned and shook his head, like a man who might have heard something, but who had decided to make up his own mind.
It's an old Type 10 conical void, Arbites Commander Lucullus reported presently. Tangent 878 harmonic wave. We don't have an override code. Lady Lang wouldn't permit it.
I bet she wishes she had now, said Interrogator Inchabel, caustic and to the point once again. I was beginning to like him.
Thank you, Lucullus, I said.
It's Lucullus, sir.
I know. I tried to remember everything Amos had counseled me about shields over the years. I wished I had his recall. Better still, I wished I had him here. We can collapse it, I said, with fair confidence.
Collapse a void shield? Ruben asked.
It's conical, super surface only, and it's old. Voids shrug off just about anything, but they don't retain their field if you take out one or more of the projectors. That buttress there, the one the garden wall is built around, that's got to be one of the projector units, seated down into the ground. Roban nodded, apparently impressed.
I see the logic, but not the practice.
I walked over to Brother Sergeant Curvel, interrupting his conversation with Haldane without apology, and explained what I wanted to do. Haldane scoffed at once.
Lyko's already trying that.
How?
He's located the outer controls at the front gate and is trying to break their coding.
Coding and controls that will be dead and locked out thanks to a Saradon. Lyko's wasting his time. We can't switch this off. We can't break a Saradon's control over its system. But we can undermine the system itself. Haldane was about to speak again, but Voke shut him up.
I think Gregor may be onto something.
Why?
Voke pointed. Close to 500 citizens were now advancing towards us from streets on all sides.
Because as you pointed out, Haldane, the monster can hear us, and he clearly doesn't like the sound of this plan.
It took Curvel about 10 minutes to gouge out the pavement and a section of garden wall with his lightning claw, and all the while we were under attack from the growing mob of puppets.
Sewer,
Curvel announced. I turned to the others as shots and missiles rained down.
Commodus, you have to hold them off a while longer.
Count on it, he said.
Roban, get a small squad and follow me.
Haldane wasn't happy. But by then, Haldane wasn't calling the shots any more. I believe he took his rage out on the enslaved citizens.
I dropped into the sewer hole with Curvel, Roban, Inchabel, and 3 troopers of the interior guard. The defense on the street above could barely spare any of them. The filthy sewer tube went in under the wall itself before dropping sharply away. Old patched stone swelled around the base of the buttress. The stone was warm, and foamy clumps of fungus were growing on it. Inchabel trained a spot beam in so I could see. Curvel could see in the dark. He took out his last 2 crack grenades and fixed them to the stonework with smears of adhesive paste from a tube he carried in his pack.
I wish we had more. We could blow the wall right through.
We could, Brother Sergeant, but this might be better.
Why?
Because if we can simply make this projector fail, the energies of the shield will short out before they collapse. Rather than blowing outwards, they'll cause an electromagnetic pulse within the field itself. And I think an EM pulse is the last thing a Saradon wants right now. As if to prove my suspicions right, a stabbing sheet of psychic power lashed at us. The Saradon had realized his vulnerability and was turning his immense power on us now. The puppets had been sport, but now it was time to control or blast out the minds of his hunters before they stopped being playthings and became a danger. The psyker attack was devastating. 2 of the interior guardsmen simply died. Another started firing, hitting Curvel twice and wounding Inchabel. Regretfully, Roban blasted the trooper down with his las pistol. Our mines were harder to attack, especially given the shield formed by the rock above us and our proximity to the energy flux of the shield. But Roban, Inchabel, Curvel, and I would be dead or homicidal in seconds. How I wished for Elizabeth, or any of the distaff right then.
Trigger it! Trigger it!
I gasped, the blood vessels in my nose and throat opening yet again that day.
We're right on top of the...
Just do it, Brother Sergeant! In the name of the God Emperor!
The blast took out the projector. It filled the sewer tunnel with flickering destruction. It would have killed us but for the fact that Brother Sergeant Curvel shielded us with his massive armored body. It cost him his life. I have made a point to have his name and memory celebrated by the White Consuls. With the generating projector killed, the void shield collapsed in on itself, blacking out the palace systems with the thunderclap of electromagnetic rage, blacking out Asaradon's seething mind, too. My research into untouchables, through Elizabeth and then through the distaff she created and ran, had indicated to me that perhaps psychic power, no matter how potent, relied in the final analysis on the electrical workings of the human mind, the firing of impulse charges between synapses. Untouchable somehow blanked this and triggered a disturbing and disarming vacancy in the natural and fundamental processes of the human brain. That, I had initially concluded, was why psychers don't work around untouchables, and why forgetfulness and unease is prevalent in their company. And ultimately why they disturb and upset humans so, and psychers doubly so. I turned the old void shield into a brief, bright, untouchable event. And now, Emperor damn him, the heretic psyker Asaradon, temporarily rendered deaf, blind, and mute, was mine.